Now, I want to read something to you. My brother Bernard sends me this, the Coffee Brother from Abbey, from the brothers, the Benedictine Brothers at Silver City, New Mexico. Supreme Court, shortly after the Civil War, an ex parte Milligan, 71 U.S. 2, which it stands to this day, neither the legislature nor any executive or judicial officer may disregard the provisions of the Constitution in case of emergency. Then he goes on to say that if someone does this, then they violate their constitutional oath. You know, it's and it doesn't matter who that is. Strange to me, why when governors and presidents are being sworn in, and this is, as far as the presidency is concerned, this is the fault of John Adams, because before Washington was sworn in, Adams asked John Jay, the first Supreme Justice, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, well, should we get a Bible? Should we make him swear on a stack of Bibles? And John Jay was like, well, I don't have one. Because, you know, they were both, Adams was an Anglican. And Adams said, I can get one. So he ran down the street to a library that was nearby, got a Bible. And then Washington put his hand on it. And then they added to the oath, which is not in the Constitution, but they added it to it, so help me God. Governors are sworn in, so help me God. When you go give testimony in a court, you're sworn in, so help me God. This God creature sounds like he is in all of these affairs when things are supposed to be like made certain, verified, and official. This God guy, or creature rather, or deity. Mm-hmm. But where is he when it comes to the actual administration? He's nowhere to be found. You know, Maggie, cue up. I want Michael to hear this. Cue up Biden. Did you hear Biden before you came on?
No.
All right. Cue up digital media phone number four. I want Michael to hear this. I want just listen to the first sentence, and then we're going to talk about this, because this is getting the Democrats are repeating this sentence or some version of it from every pulpit that they have access to, including their media.
To renew our sacred vow, never forget. Never forget. We never forget. Each of us, each of those precious lives stolen too soon when evil attacked. Ground Zero in New York. And I remember standing there the next day and looking at the building. I felt like I was looking through the gates of hell. It looked so.
All right, he wasn't there. Sacred, we have a sacred oath. We have a sacred, they keep using the term, Pelosi used it the other day. Our, wax on, 10 to 12,000, 150,000 dead Ukrainians, all roads lead to Putin, wax on. Sacred democracy, sacred, they finally found something, Michael, that's sacred, but it's not.
Right.
But it's not.
Marriage isn't sacred. Life isn't sacred. But, you know,
democracy.
Democracy is.
No, I shouldn't
bless their hearts.
No, I shouldn't be in his remarks. Okay, if you find a transcript, Maggie, see if you can find a transcript of what Biden said, and word search it for how many times he said democracy, because he kept saying, those jihadis, those terrorists, they attacked our freedom. You know, this is the oldest bromide in the book. They attacked our freedom. Well, if they lived in caves and they were herding goats, how did they know we had this thing called freedom?
Right.
Couldn't have been on television. So how did they find out that we had this freedom and that we had the Bud Light girls scantily clad on our television commercials?
Well, it's kind of like I keep asking my wife, who told my children they have a free will?
Oh, do they keep pulling that one on you?
Oh yeah.
You know that one gets you. Will get you almost every time. But they keep using it. Now, look, I'm glad that they found something sacred, but alas, it's not actually sacred. But this, you know, Pelosi even said, or it might have been it was Schumer that said, and they came into this our sacred temple of democracy. That's how he referred to the chamber, the floor of the to the chamber of the United States Senate, and to the floor or to the chamber of the House of Representatives. They came into our into the sacred temple of our democracy. They really think they have actually erected and are the ministers or the popes, if you will, or the bishops of some sort of a new religion.
Right.
And I think that the average American Sherson that sees this, now let's talk apples and apples for a moment. What was a crusader, a Catholic crusader, what was he willing to do for his religion in 1095? Not a trick question, Mr. Hitchburn.
I'm sorry, I missed part of that question.
Okay, what was a crusader, a Catholic knight crusader, willing to do for his religion in the year that was 1095?
He was willing to die for it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Many men, if they have this religion, are willing to die for it. We're told that the jihadis, we're told that the Muslims have, the Orthodox Muslims at least, have this religion so fervently that they are willing to die for it. Well, here in the United States, for this sacred temple of democracy and for the sacred religion, they're not so much willing to die, but they are willing to sacrifice me and you.
Yep.
So someone's going to die. It's just not going to be them. In other words, they're not going to be Lord Farquhar and Shrek.
Right.
Or they are going to be Lord Farquhar and Shrek. Some of you may die, but that's a risk that I'm willing to take. That, folks, if viewed through that lens, and your state government is probably as guilty about of this as well, you know, we as practicing Christians, for those of you that aren't Catholics, and I hope that all of you convert someday, I really do. And by the way, you should appreciate the fact that I never waver from saying that, because I'm supposed to say it. You have things that you're probably supposed to say in your denomination or faith. Michael and I have things that we are supposed to do and say, but we're supposed to live them. And we're supposed to say them out of love and charity, never out of angry or frustration or hatred or anything of the sort. It's always supposed to be an act of charity to say, no, I want you to become a Catholic. I talk to my family members all the time who keep refusing. We keep going, it's not going to happen. We keep telling me no, but I just cheerfully keep going like, well, you know, if you really have that problem, can I suggest that you go to the Blessed Virgin Mary and ask her for help? Have you tried it? In any event, as Michael says, all of this all points to a spiritual war. One that's going on that you and I, whether we like it or not, are involved in. We're embroiled in it. We can't get away. We know we shouldn't want to get away from it. We shouldn't be afraid to fight that war. I sent you the story from John Daniel Davidson, who I believe is he might be out of the closet now.
Oh, boy.
No, as a Catholic.
Oh, okay.
No, he's a good guy. No, we read John Daniel. He's good. Doja Cat's demons, I did this story yesterday. Doja Cat's demons are real whether she believes in them or not. And this is another one of these video send-ups where Hollywood and the people that make music videos now are using the demonic to sell bad music, okay? Mm-hmm. And they seem to think, or they seem to be of the opinion, or at least are acting as though that there is nothing wrong with this. And as John Daniel says, you can't inject demons into your popular culture and not expect demons to become part of it. Right. You can't inject demons into your civilization and not expect demons to become a part of the civilization.
Well, there's a reason why we have a saying, speak of the devil. You know, the second half of it is,
no, what is the second
speak
half?
Of the devil and he'll appear.
You see, they conveniently left the second part out.
Yep. That's also why the devil is usually referred to as he who shall not be named.
Well, this is certainly in Masonic circles, he who shall not be named.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to. Now, some of them have to say what they are saying because they're under They're basically under oath, especially if they've sold their souls to the to the devil. They have already made the commitment, and so they have to show some of the connection. And there are several ways that they do this. The old right hand tucked inside the left crease of a coat, of a button coat. Mm-hmm. That's one way. Now, many people, you know, they if you go to a Halloween party and someone's dressed as Napoleon, he's going to have his right hand stuck inside the lapel of his general jacket, right?
Right.
Few people make the connection, though, that, well, that's Napoleon just showing his Masonic ruling masters, hey, man, look, I'm representing, brah. I even let him paint me like this. Which may have been, he may not have been running around doing that. He may have just gone, all right, I'll pose for a painting. All right, give me the world, and I'll give this to you. I was talking yesterday about how another way you can see this in public, if you follow some certain celebrities or musicians or actors or whatever, or influencers, if you find in any instances where they have very prominently given the okay, which is the 666 if you look at it correctly, given the okay symbol to be photographed, that's one thing, or if they have given the horns of the devil, which is pinky finger and forefinger raised, that's a second way. Those people are telling the ones that gave them the power, the fame, the fortune, and the glory, I haven't forgotten my vow.
Right.
I'm one of yours. This is me saying this. It's like me wearing my St. Augustine medal every day and on the outside of my clothing. So if anybody takes notice of it, and by the way, I have a relic of St. Augustine, it gets touched to that relic every day. This is like me wearing this, or you wearing your St. Benedict cross on the outside of your shirt, or you and I being photographed in the Orans position with our eyes closed praying the Hail Mary. You see where I'm going with this?
Absolutely, yep.
So, we're doing it for as public acts of piety and mm-hmm. a filial love of God and the beautiful Catholic Church and religion that he has given us to defend and to practice here on earth. They're doing it for the enemy of that church. Folks, you have to understand this. And if they're doing it for the enemy, are they playing nice?
No.
No. Now, last week you and I talked about Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming more people are listening to that podcast now every day. It comes in two parts, and you can find it on the New Christendom Daily podcast, How the Cult of Satanism and Scientology Created the Plandemic, Part 2. Well, we can also say that the Satanism and the cult of Satanism and Scientology created almost all of these modern of these modern epics in time, of which we have been talking, and I went back and I started reading again from the occult history behind NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Oh yes,
people might go like, what in the Hades does the Jet Propulsion Laboratory (JPL) have to do with Scientologists? And you brought it up last week. Now, what was the Thelemites? Thelema,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit about Thelema, but we kind of left we didn't talk a lot about Thelema. Give us a refresher. What is Thelema?
Thelema is the pseudo religion that was created by Aleister Crowley, and it was he's the one that created that saying that do what thou wilt
yes.
is the whole of the law. And the idea is that you can basically do whatever you want, and that's the law. Just go out and do what you want. But the whole pseudo religion of Thelema ends up in sex magic, and I mean it's really gross. I don't recommend anybody read up on it. It's pretty foul. So Aleister Crowley created this thing, He had all sorts of chants and mantras and different pseudo prayers that he had written for this thing. And by the way, what he wrote was actually spirit written, which is it's a practice where they automatic writing, where somebody goes into a trance and they get possessed by a demon. And that demon writes through their hand.
Oh, it's called. Okay. Pause. Deliver Us From Evil tapes, me and Ralph Sarchi, Amityville Horror, episode one. Listen to it. It's all about spiritists and spiritism.
Yep.
This is what spiritists do, and this is a 19th century, early 19th century form of occultism. Folks, there are people still practicing this. If you go to a medium and you ask her to read your palm, or she asks you to touch a part of your body, and you give it to her, what's going to happen is if there's anything that's going to come out of that, it's going to come out of the fact that one of you is now being contacted directly by a demon who does know Aunt Mamie's history, mm-hmm. who knows where Aunt Mamie hid the money, or the proverbial money in the cookie jar. Well, I'm going to ask a question no one could possibly know. It's the oldest deceit in the book.
Yep.
Because the demon knows everything. The demon that was on her, the bogey that was on her, the screw tape letter demon, the nephew that was on her, knows where she hid the money.
Yep.
And can tell the medium, well, this is where they are. So you have to, when Michael says it, I want you to pay very close attention. Anytime, anyone, it doesn't matter what it is. If you have a friend that's going, I'm going to go to the carnival this weekend. Yeah, they got a tarot card reader. I'm going to sit down with the tarot card reader. You better not.
Yep.
And if you know someone that does, and they touch those cards, and she's touched them, and they've invited a bogey in to tell a story, brother. Well, there, dude, you are opening a portal to hell. You are giving you are opening the door, going like, "Come on in, I dare you, demon, come on in." So you got to when this spiritism stuff happens. You know, one of the instances that I did in the Deliver Us From Evil tapes that I talked about, so one of the first persons that they conjured up was George Washington.
Oh goodness,
the spiritist. And the demon was able to tell the spiritist stuff about Washington's life that would only be known later. And they go, see, we were right. Would only become known later when Washington's diaries were published. But the demon knew, and he knew enough convincing details to convince people that Washington was actually one of them. And that was the ruse, Michael. It wasn't right. That there was a demon there. It was that Washington was one of them, and he joined their ranks. And therefore, other people should join because, hey, good enough for George Washington, father of our country, good enough for you, citizen. So that's where the spiritism. I just wanted to give people a 30,000-foot view of spiritism. If you know someone is messing around with this, stay away.
Right, right. So Aleister Crowley's Thelema movement. The basic idea was that one should always be following one's will. Do what thou wilt is the whole of the law, right? And that ultimately through, and you see this a lot in, you know, the, what is it? The Secret, which is Oprah Winfrey's big thing, where if you will something hard enough, mm-hmm. it'll come into being.
Mm-hmm.
So that's rooted in Aleister Crowley's Thelema, is it's basically magic based on the imposition of the will. And of course, what you're doing is you wind up getting into different yoga meditations, and you have these chants and rituals and all sorts of just really sick and perverted practices. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what you wind up doing is worshiping yourself. You turn yourself and your will into a god. And you use that force of will, which is actually now attached to a demon, to go out and to accomplish the things that you wish to accomplish. And what's happening behind the scenes is that the demon is now it's acting as an extension of your desire to fulfill your desire in order to draw you in closer and closer to hell's destination. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what Thelema is. And what you wound up happening, the whole question about the lab, which you brought up earlier, which is that Jack Parsons.
That's right.
who ran the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, was a practitioner of Thelema. He spent time with Aleister Crowley. He and L. Ron Hubbard both were with Crowley and all that. L. Ron Hubbard, of course, wrote Dianetics, which everybody who watched TV in the 80s saw those silly commercials with the big volcano, and they're like, did you know that little particles called muons pass through everything on the Earth? Did you know? You know, it had all those did you know questions. The whole idea was, and it was, again, an imposition of the will that, gosh, you know, there's a scientific method to everything going on in the world.
Who knew?
And that all the knowledge of science is actually a way to aid your will in coming to an imposition of your will on the world. So you can now manipulate the world to become what you want it to be. So L. Ron Hubbard was also a friend of Crowley's. The three of them, Parsons, Hubbard, and Crowley, used to get together to do these wife swaps and horrible, nasty things. And Hubbard then went and founded Scientology, which people are finding out more and more is just beyond perverted, but they have all kinds of weird influential power that prevents police investigations, congressional investigations. You can't seem to be able to penetrate the influential sphere of Scientology as they gain more and more prominent influence in various aspects of society. So it's there's a very strange growth of the influence of Scientology in the world, and it all comes down to this. I honestly think that it comes down to what conversation Pope Leo XIII overheard between the devil and Lucifer, where the devil said, if I had more time and more power, I could destroy your church. How much time? How much power? About 75 to 100 years. And the key part, more power over those who would give themselves over to me.
So the increase in selling of the soul to the devil, by the by, just for poops and giggles. Now, I don't recommend anyone actually watch this. But maybe you've already seen it, and you go like, wait a minute, I never thought of it like that. They made a movie about this disordered sexual wackiness, and a Scientologist was in it, mm-hmm. as was his wacko sicko wife, Nicole Kidman. Eyes wide shut. And by the way, the guy that was directing it must have been going, hey, well, I don't know if we can do this, because they killed Stanley Kubrick during did Kubrick die during Eyes Wide Shut or during AI?
Eyes Wide Shut.
He died during Eyes Wide Shut. So Kubrick just has a massive coronary. Like, he's in his trailer, and they go to get him, and like, he ain't answering the door, bruh. Eyes Wide Shut is a documentary. They do this, folks. They're daring you to do something about it. They're going like, what are you going to do about it? So what? Yeah, it's a documentary. So? Yeah, we do this. Of course we do. Because people have a hard time going believing that this stuff goes on. And again, read Paul Kangor's book, The Devil and Karl Marx. And if you don't want to read the whole book, fast forward to chapter 12, where he talks about Kate Millett and about how Kate Millett was having these spirit sessions at her apartment in Manhattan, and where her sister stumbled into one because she wanted to visit her sister. And there were 12 naked women sitting around a table handling a giant python, and there was a knife in the center of the table. Mm-hmm. And the sister didn't ask any questions, went, I think I'm going to come back later. and then ran down the street. This stuff is real. It really happens, and it really matters. Because these people that practice this stuff primarily are connected to power. Now, that's not an accident, by the way. The connection to power and the access to wealth and power and fame or material wealth, dollar bill related or dollar valued wealth. That's not an accident. That's part of the deal.
Right.
This is part of what you sign up for. Now, if you find this story about the JPL, it's so bizarre to read that it defies. If I didn't know about the Thelemites and Thelema, I wouldn't believe it. I'd go, okay, that's just wacky. So about Jack Parsons. So why don't we know anything about Parsons? Now, this guy, it was his idea to start this thing with what we call today JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Has anyone ever wondered, well, why is the JPL out in Pasadena, California, and not at Cape Canaveral? Well, because the bad guys weren't in, well, maybe they were, but this collection of bad guys was in California. And the story of how the guy dies, and the dude that wrote the story goes like, well, how come no one knows about this Jack Parsons guy and the fact that he was a Thelemite? And he goes, well, because no one would believe the story if you published it.
Right.
No one would believe the story. Just a quick reference to the supercluster.com editorial. To me, Jack's story was someone that starts out as a rocket and turns into a bomb. In both cases, you have fuel, the thing that will burn up and feed the combustion. In Parsons' case, and in all people's cases, I saw that fuel as the will. As the thing that pushes you towards some sort of objective or purpose. What's equally important in a rocket and in life in some sense of is some sense of control and constraints. In a rocket, those things had to be carefully kept in harmony and in balance. If the control and constraint is too strong, it won't even get off the ground. It won't go anywhere. The same goes for Jack Parsons or any person. That if there are constraints, whether they're social or psychological, that are keeping you from pursuing what you want to pursue, you won't do any of it. Conversely, in a rocket, if those constraints are not good enough, then the whole thing just explodes. It does turn into a bomb. Right. Now, perhaps he concludes, perhaps the oddest thing about Parsons' untimely death, now he died young, he was only 37.
Yep.
Untimely death is its role in effectively erasing him from JPL history. The most NASA mentions of the self-taught engineer is a generally vague sentence about amateur engineers working alongside Caltech researchers. Better known in history as a fanatic, the most space industry clout Parsons ever posthumously received was having a small crater on the moon named after him. It's on the far side of the moon, the one we rarely get to see. And this guy Heyman that participates in the story thinks it's obvious why we don't hear more about Jack Parsons. Drug use and orgies is just a hard thing to fold into NASA's official story. And someone who works on storytelling, it was like, guys, don't you see it? He makes you guys look cool. And then the book is called, or the TV show is called Strange Angel. Have you ever seen
it? Oh, yes, right. Yep, I remember it now.
I haven't seen it.
But I haven't seen it either.
Well, I'm just wondering now if this is Strange Angel. His life has recently been adapted in the CBS All Access series Strange Angel, based on the biography Strange Angel, the otherworldly life of rocket scientist John Whiteside Parsons by George Pendle. And Mark Hyman was the guy that created the series here. And I don't know if they deal with any of the Scientology aspects of what we talked about here, but Strange Angel may be, if we could find it, might be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I agree.
So, at the end of the day, as we began with the continuation of controversies over 9/11, and then the JFK assassination, and then the guy coming out and going like, hey, I know where that bullet came from. It was in the back seat. It was lodged in the back seat, which is why it could have passed through Connolly and going through his arm and through his chest and what have you here, because it couldn't have gone through Kennedy, through his skull, out through his larynx and then out of his throat and then into Connolly and then ripping through Connolly and exiting ultimately in his abdomen or whatever. There's a whistleblower, if you will, that's come out about this. But then what we ultimately do, as we do, is we try these things together here to show that this is all of these things are interrelated, and they all point to that there is a battle between good and evil going on.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough people are on the good side. And maybe because they just don't know that there is they see the bad in books and movies and TV shows, but they really think it is a creation of Hollywood, and don't think that there are actually real bogeys out there that are really out to get them. That's the tragedy.
Yep.
So, Mr. Hitchburn, when will this follow-up report come out at lepantoin.org?
This is it's not a report on Common Spirit.
Okay.
It's a report on something else. And we will be issuing this report in November.
Okay. So you know when it's coming out.
Yeah, we're working on putting the report together now. We had to kind of pull together all of the information. We're still going through all of the information and processing it and making sure that everything is in a way that flows in an understandable manner. In fact, we're probably going to be splitting this into three separate reports.
And by the way, for those of you that are want to continue reading and researching on this, Maggie has found this. It looks as though this is an ad for Dianetics, the book.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been a TV ad. Did you play it?
1980. No.
Could you play it before? Because Michael brought it up.
Dianetics by L. Ron Hubbard. Pick up a copy today wherever paperbacks are sold. Dianetics by L. Ron Hubbard.
It just keeps.
It's like one of the questions: Have you invested in yourself?
Have you invested in yourself and your particles lately?
Can you increase your confidence and self-respect?
You know, this idea of conquering the will and that the will brings things into existence. My friend, history professor emeritus of the University of South Carolina, Don Livingston. Don would call the non-demonic part of this will to power. And his favorite example, Michael, is he gives the example of baseball. And he goes, let me give you an example of will to power. At the time of Abner Doubleday, there was no such thing as a baseball or a baseball bat or a glove. It all had to be created so that this thing called baseball could actually be played. And he said now look at what's happened after the creation of the thing, which if you go back to what we began the conversation with at Jet Propulsion Laboratory, this Jack Parsons guy, we don't know what the demons whispered in his ear. The demons might have whispered in his ear, and he might have thought that he came up with it going like, no, make that an X. Make that form there an X right there. Yeah, yeah. X to the third. All right, that's right. X. Yeah. Now, sin that by 62. Yeah. He may have been being guided the whole time. The demons going like, we can build your rocket. You want a rocket? Get your rocket by 3 o'clock this afternoon. Sell your soul to me. I don't even have to have a reason.
Right.
So the fact that there was these wackos Hubbard and Crowley and Parsons are at the founding of JPL. You know, a lot has been written and said about the space program and the fact that the United States was, we were just a bit too eager to admit those Nazis like Wernher von Braun into the space program. And didn't you know that they were building the V-2? And you know what they were going to use, they were going to do with the V-2?
Oh, yeah.
Now, of course, they could have been told von Braun and them, no, it's for peaceful purposes. It's as a deterrent. You know, in the same way that people are saying, no, build the plutonium bomb. No, it's a deterrent against another bomb. We're never going to use one. So, hopefully they never will. All right, you can find Michael Hitchborn hiding in plain sight at lepantoin.org. Lepantoin.org. Sign up for his email. And you can participate in the Friday afternoon video conferences and much, much more. And you can also support his great work that he does at lepantoin.org. Brother, we shall see you in 2 weeks, if not sooner. Guess where I'm off to this weekend?
Where are you headed?
I am headed to a place called Greensburg, Indiana.
Hmm.
It is the home of the Edelweiss, the Edelweiss House, which is where the Midwestern/Appalachian Catholic Land Movement Conference, regional conference, is being held.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So going there to be the, going to present, going to be an MC, going to record some of the talks, which, yes, I will bring back for Crusade Maxers out there, and going to aid and assist in any way I can with the now surging Catholic land movement. So this is the second conference this summer, or this will actually happen in fall. No, it'll happen this summer. That's right. The one in upstate New York was met and held, and now this one in the Appalachian Midwestern region. So that's where I will be, and I will, of course, report back to all of you. So we'll see you in 2 weeks here, if not sooner.
Roger that. 2 weeks. Let's hope the world stays intact while in the meantime.
It may or it may not, which means all of you stay in a state of grace. Because the role you have to play in that is to not participate in the evil part of it.
Yep.
And to be part of the things that are actually sacred. All right, so find Michael at lepantoin.org. We'll see you soon, brother. God bless you.
All right, God bless you. God bless your audience.
Thank you very much.